Shavua Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Yitin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Nun Gimel, and we're continuing on in this Mishnah to discuss another Indian of Tikkun Olam. It's also been again as Zakin. However, in this case, the Nezek that we're referring to is actually a Nezek that is of a completely different type, which is called Hezek Sheino Nikar. And here the question is, if it's something that is not detectable in any way, and yet the nezek is there, let's say tuma is not detectable, or asring something because of avodah zarah, that's not detectable, and so on. So the question is whether those things are considered to be nezek or not. And if they are considered to be nezek, would it be because of a tikkun olam, or is it a given that they're considered nezek? And then there might be a tikkun olam to actually potter someone who does such a thing, b'shogeg, as we'll see. Those are the issues that our mission is going to be talking about. So it gives three examples of a hezek she'eino nikar. I guess Ari just wanted to show us 1/10 of a second that he's actually there and he isn't a dog, I hope. Anyway, maybe a lion, but certainly not a dog. There we go. All right, his master's voice. Fine. That's what we're listening to, Ari. This is the Daf Yomi, his master's voice. Baruch Hashem, Adon Kol HaOlam. Okay, so the Mishnah gives three examples of Hezek Sheino Nikar. One is someone who causes Tuma. So, okay, the Gemara's going to discuss. We're talking about being Matami Truma. We're talking about Matami Chulin. Midameya is somebody who mixes up Chulin and Truma. So now that reduces the price drastically because now it's only edible by Kohanim, and so you've reduced your market by 95%. So obviously the price is going to drop precipitously. And the last case is Minasech, somebody who turns a person's Yayin into Yayin Esech. Everyone's going to ask, how does he do that? Mishogeg Patur B'mezit Chayav. So our Mishnah seems to be saying that whatever the Tikkun Olam is, as I keep clear from the Mishnah, this is obviously part of our list of Tikkun Olam. Is the Tikkun Olam that b'mezid your chayev, or is the Tikkun Olam that b'shogeg your pater? This is what the Gemara is going to figure out now. But let's first figure what is the meaning of how you do these things. How do you do a menasech that you should be chayev? So itma menasech, Rav says, it means that you are literally minasech. You actually turn this wine into Yayin Esech by pouring it out to Avodah Zarah. Mishmul Omar Ma'arev. No, not that he himself did Avodah Zarah. There was some Yayin Esech, and he mixed this Yayin Esech into another person's kosher wine, and thereby he answered it. So Mandi Omar Ma'arev. So look, I mean, if you're going to tell me that we're talking about Ma'arev, it's a very strange word to use if you're referring to Ma'arev. Why do we say Menasech? Menasech means pouring out. I mean, how is this Ma'arev pouring out? So why exactly would he not just take the Mishnah at face value? It means you poured out the wine. Oh, Malacha Menasech? That's crazy. You would not be Chayev if you actually poured out the wine to Avodah Zarah yourself, because then you would be Chayev because of Kom Le'Bidur Abamine. You're Chayev for Avodah Zarah. So that if you're chayev misa for doing avodah zarah, there's no din of tashlumin, as we've seen thousands of times. And indeed, what would be the possibility, according to Rav, how can we possibly learn it's menasech that you would be chayev on? V'idach, Rav says, well, can Rabbi Yirmiya? Rabbi Yirmiya points out that where you have two stages, let's say in this case, if you want to be menasech, you'd have to first lift the wine up and then pour it out to Avodah Zarah. And if you do that, in the lifting of the wine, you were already kena it, which was an act of gezeila. And at that point, you would be chayev. The moment that you pour it out to Avodah Zarah, it's only then that you become chayev benafsho. And that's not considered to all be one thing. In which case, b'sha'at hagba'a hudekona, mitchayev benafsho lo habi ad sha'at nisuch. And therefore, it's not a problem. I just want to mention to everyone that Rashi originally takes the meaning of menasech to be a technical menasech. He says that the Mishnah would be referring to a case which was the standard derech of being manasseh for Avodah Zarah, which again we've seen many times, that the Oved Avodah Zarah simply puts his hand into the wine and swishes it around in the name of the Lord, whatever his name, right? And however, at the end, it's clear that we're talking about lifting it out, up, and pouring out. So that apparently Rashi only said that at the beginning of the sugya. That's how Chassam Sofer understands it. It's quite reasonable because we're talking about a Hagbah. In any event, why would we not want to say Me'arev? L'man de'omim menaseich. My time lo amar Me'arev. Because after all, over here, you're going to have to be Bedavka talking about that type of menaseich. And it's going to have to be going with this sheet of Rabbi Mia. So why don't you say it means Me'arev? Says Rav, it can't mean Me'arev. Because why would we have two cases in the Mishnah that essentially tell us the same thing? The case in the Mishnah of Midameya means that you mixed, that's called Me'arev. You mixed Truma and Chulin. So, I mean, if you're going to tell me that mixing Chulin and Truma you're chayev, why do I need to know that mixing kosher wine and non-kosher wine you're chayev? It's the same idea. And therefore, the Mishnah would not have used an example twice for no reason. I mean, obviously, the Mishnah is not giving us the infinity of cases that you can call Mezek, Shen, and Eker. That's not the point. So therefore, says Rav, it's clearly introducing something new. And that must be precisely what it's introducing. This Chiddush, that a Menaseh is not considered to become like Bimin Rabbanine. So, how did the Shmuel answer that problem? It is repetitious, is it not? Says Shmuel, no, that wouldn't be repetitious. I still say it means Ma'arev, because when you're dealing with a Knas, this issue over here is a Knas, because the din is that Hezek She'ino Niker, says Shmuel, is not called Hezek Miniraisen. And it's the Rabbanan who made it into Hezek. Well, you can never learn one Knas from another Knas, because you never know what the circumstances are, why it is that the Rabbanan felt that this was something that people were doing and that needed to be taken care of, whatever. There may be many different tamim that we're not clear about. And therefore, we're not going to see it as repetitive. Now, Rav obviously is not very impressed with that argument. Rav holds that we could learn Knas from a Knas, which is precisely why he says that I am not going to tell you that Menaseich means to mix, because then it would simply be repeating the din of the Midameya. So according to Rav, why do we have three examples? According to Shmuel, I understand. Every example is indeed unique, because I need to know all of the types of things that the Rabbanan give a Knas, because a Knas is not a general rule. But according to Rav, why mention these three cases, since I could give you one example of Hezek Shein Niker, and then I would know. I have an Ezek Sheniniker and Bishogi Gir Prot. So Kohani Lomeli. Ah, says Rav, I'll explain to you why we need each one. Sricha. Because let's go in the order of our Mishnah. If the Tana would have said Mitame, okay, what do you think it's referring to, first of all? I mean, if it's referring to Truma, so then I would say, okay, you know why the Mitame is going to be Chayev? Because of the Knaz? That's because he totally made it impossible to eat that truma at all. So we can't learn out other cases where he didn't make it impossible. Let's go on and we'll see what we mean. And if we're talking about being metame chulin, which of course doesn't cause any isurim, however, it certainly does damage its value, because there are many, many people who then were makbid not to eat chulin if it was tame. They'll only eat chulin if it's tame while they're tame. So why would the rabbanan make? I would say, but still, even being metame chulin is because the guy did an iser. There's an iser usher ligrom tumel chulin sheberetz Yisrael because of the people that are makbid, and therefore, I would think that the rabbanan made the knas because he did an iser. But somebody who mixes truma with chulin didn't do any iser. I mean, if he's a Kohen, that's the normal way that he would be utilizing Truma. You know, you have some things that are Truma and some things that aren't Truma. You want to make a quiche out of the two ingredients, you mix them. Why not? So Midameya, where there's no Isser involved, Emalo, maybe there's no Knaz. Viashwina Midameya, I would say, okay, mixing things happens all the time. Those people aren't careful about not mixing, but they are very careful about not being mitame, and they stay away from truma. So mitame de lo shriach, that's something that doesn't happen all that often, and therefore maybe the rabbanon, since that's generally the idea, is that the rabbanon make a knas where it's something that they need to worry about, and therefore techa de shriach the rabbanon rekenes. But if it's not shriach, so they weren't gozer. So maybe there was no knas. Gamash from the Mishnah. Even in this case, we're going to make you pay for Hezek, Shein, and Nick. Now, let's say we would have known both of those cases. Mitameh, Midameh. Yes, but what about Menaseh? Menaseh, I would have thought you'd not be Chayev on because of Kimle B'Rabamineh. Him alone. Therefore, specifically, the Mishnah lists Menaseh so that we should know the Chiddush of Rabbi Yirmiyah, that Misha'at Hagba'a Hudekon Hilah. The actual Nisuch only, the Chiyev for the Nisuch only happens later. And because of that, there's no Kimle bin Rabbi. So meanwhile, the Mishnah wanted to tell us this case so that we should learn that this too is an example of Chiyav on Hezek Shein and Nik. Now, we have also a Braita. And the way that it's presented in the Braita, we're going to have another Seder of understanding why I wouldn't have been able to derive one from the other. Because the way that it's presented by Avud or Bavin in that Braita that he brings is like this. Originally, Berishon, now Yomrim, Ametameh, V'Amenaseh. There were only two of the cases that they said initially, that you're Chayav Mishum Hezek Shein Undikr if you do it B'Mezid. And then, after generations, they made an additional Gezerah, that Afa Midameya. So then it goes in a different order then. So explain to me, what was the Seder of the thinking? Why do I need these three cases, according to Rav, in that order? Well, Tzrichet. Let's start at Mitameh. Mitameh, I would say, if we just had the original two possibilities. I have Mitameh and I have Menaseh. Okay, Mitameh would never teach me Menaseh because I wouldn't have known the din of Kamlei bin Rabamineh. I would have said, well, Menaseh, you're not going to be Chayev on because you're being Oved of an Azorah. We wouldn't have known the din of Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Menaseh, the Kimlei bin Rabamineh Amalo. V'yashmin Menaseh, on the other hand, if the case would have been Menaseh, which would have taught me the halacha of Rabbi Yirmiyah, and so you'd say, okay, so what's the problem now? Why don't I know Mitameh? Ah, Menasech is Asur Bahana'ah, and it's totally useless once you're Menasech, rewind. But when it comes to being Mitameh, the Truma, it's only Asur Bahachila, but there's still plenty of other things that you can do with Truma that is Tmeah. So it can be fed to a Behema, it can be burned as fuel, and therefore, I would say, okay, the Rabbanim maybe only made the Knas on Hezek Shein and Nikar where it is truly destroyed, but not just where it causes a partial loss. So therefore, I would say in that case, not. And then when they made the third level, what was the need for that? Ah, because Yashmin and Hani Tarte, if you would have told me these two cases, I would have said these two cases are real loss. I mean, one is a 100% total loss, which is the Menaseh, and the other one, which is going to be Matame Trum, is a 100% loss in terms of Achila. That's drastic. Midameah, on the other hand, simply changes the value because of making the market for it more limited because only Kohanim are going to be able to eat it. So Midameah, which is Hefsid Mu'at, Emelo. Therefore, Tzricha, we put all three cases in that order, and that actually covers both directions for us, however we want to look at it. Now the question is, what is the Tikkun HaOlam? Is the Tikkun HaOlam to make someone pay for Hezek Shein HaNikar when he does it on purpose? Because Hezek Shein HaNikar Miniraisa is not Hezek? Or is the Tikkun HaOlam to say that even though Hezek Shein HaNikar in the Torah should be exactly the same as Hezek Shein HaNikar, we are going to let you off and not pay if it was done b'shogeg? We'll see why that would be a tikkun HaOlam. What kind of tikkun? That we'll see in a moment. So it turns out that it's actually a major machlokas. Is Hezek Shein HaNikar, mi'ikar adin, in the Torah, considered to be Hezek or not? So Omar Chizkiah, actually, Dvar Torah, Echad Shokeg Ve'echad Meisit Chayav. My time, Hezek Shein HaNikar, is Shmei Hezek. So actually, what the Mishnah is telling us is that the Rabbanan said you don't have to pay. But if we would have left it on the D'oraisa, you would have had to pay whether it was done B'Shogeg or B'Mezid. So then, what's the Tikkun HaOlam to say that Bishogeg Yerpater, says Chiske, that Tikkun Olam is, that you should tell the guy. I mean, look, if you would be Chayev, and you accidentally were Metame this guy's Truma, you say to yourself, oh, heck, if I tell him, it's going to cost me $500. I just won't tell him, and, you know, he'll be a Shogeg, not so bad. We don't want people being over on the Yisurim of eating Truma, which is a Chiyav Misah B'Dei Shamayim, even if it's a Shogeg. We want him to know that something is Usur. So because of that, we said, okay, you know what? You can tell him, be honest, and you won't have to pay, because Mishum Tikkun HaOlam, we're going to pater you. So this is how Chiske understands it, that the direction of the Mishnah, the Chiddush of the Mishnah, is not the Knas that you're Chayav, as we've been assuming up until this point. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is that even though Midiraisi, you would have been Chayav even B'Shogeg, because you don't need a Knas, this is normal Hezek. Just because you can't detect it doesn't mean it isn't Hezek. But we take you off of the Tashlum of B'Shogeg in order that you should be upfront about the damage that you caused him. Well, wait a minute. So don't we need to worry about that if you did it amazing? That we want to make sure that you'll tell the guy so that that way he's not going to be over? Oh, don't be silly. If it's b'mezid, hashna b'zuki ka b'chavin. The whole point is that the guy did this on purpose. Why did he do it on purpose? Because he wants you to suffer. So if he wants you to suffer, he's obviously going to tell you. What's the point of being matama your truma if he can't stick his tongue out and go, I pot on your truma? Okay, so then, of course he's going to tell him. He took that into consideration. I don't have to make it possible for him to tell him. Okay, so this is Chizkiah's approach, Hezek Shenon Iker, is considered to be Hezek. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, no. On the contrary, Dvar Torah, actually, you would be potter totally. Echad Shogeg v'echad Mezid Patur, my time, Hezek Shenon Nikar is not called Hezek. The Rabbanan said that the Mezid your Chayev as a Tikkun Olam. What's the Tikkun Olam? Can you imagine a world where you can mess up another person for tens of thousands of dollars and not be responsible? And just like destroy his things and then say, sorry, buddy. You know, it was Matame all your Truma, Menasech all your wine. It's horrifying. So because of that, the Rabbanan had to make a Tikkun Olam so that society doesn't fall apart. Somebody gets mad at you. There he goes and takes it out on you and you can't even sue him. Shelo yekol echad v'yachad olechu metamei ta'arotav shochevero v'omer paturani. Okay, now the next Mishnah is going to bring us to a case of Kohanim. Kohanim that were mefagel in the Mikdash. So they wrecked your carbon for you because they had a machsheves pigol, tirit chutz lezmana, chutz l'mekayim. And the halacha over there is, in the Mishnah as well, the same as this hezekim. Mezidim chayavim. And it says in a braita, why bemezid? That's what seems to be said. Why mezidim chayavim mipnei tikkun olam? Now that only makes sense if the chiyav is a tikkun olam, right? Like Rabbi Yochanan. If you're going to tell me, like Chiskiya, that Iyamret Hezek she'inu nikar ishme Hezek, then the tikkun olam is that shogegin should be potter, not that mezidim should be chayav. So it should have said, Shogegim peturim, b'nei tikkun olam yipoyle, right? Yes, it's Chizkiah. Look, it's a braisa. I mean, it's not the lashon of the Mishnah. The braisa is talking to you about the implications of the Mishnah, right? The implications of the Mishnah are that mezidim chayavim, but shogegim peturim. Ask yourself, says the braisa, why shogegim peturim? B'nei tikkun olam. So it's just talking about the implications. And that's what it is saying. If it says that the Kohanim are in the Mishnah, Mezidim Chayavim, so then the implication obviously is that Hashogeg and Peturim comes on the Braisa to explain why. Masiv Rabbi Elazar. I got a problem, says Rabbi Elazar, that it certainly shows that we're not going to be able to support this approach because it says, Osem Lecha B'mei Chatat. Now, as we know, the Torah says beferish, asher lo Allah aleha ol. So if you do anything with that paraduma, that's paraduma could be worth $5 million, right? And so all you need to do to mess up that paraduma is to use it to do some kind, anything with, smallest thing. And then it becomes possible. So that's like, whoa, that's the ultimate hesitation of nature, boy. And the same thing is true that the Torah says when it comes to the mayim that is being used to be metayer, mechatas, so over there also it has to be lemishmeret lemechatat. Lemishmeret lemechatat means that you need to retain your awareness of it, that it's a mechatat, and not use it for anything else. So now, here it says that if you did damage, destroying the guy's parah aduma, or destroying his mechatas, you'd be poter midine yadam v'chayiv midine shamayim. Now, how in the world is Chizkiah going to explain that away? If Chizkiah holds it, hezek shedu nikra shmei hezek, why does it say you're poter midine yadam? You should be chayiv through the nose, man. You caused him $5 million of damage. So midine yadam nami l'chayiv. Hu motiv la v'hu mefarek la. Rabbi Elazar came up himself with the solution. The solution is that when it says over here that you passled it, it means only that you were going to passel it, but you didn't passel it directly. So this becomes now the equivalent of groma benezikin, where you have groma benezikin generally is passel. How did you manage to do that, that it should be a groma? So what you did was like this. You took the parah, you put the parah into its rivka, its stall, and over there, it's where its mommy is, and it needs to nurse. So you were being very, very nice to the parah. Not doing anything wrong by putting the parah in next to mommy, are you? But when you put the parah in next to mommy, you had in mind that, oh, there's all of this straw on the ground, which was actually, I took the wheat and I put it there. So while the parah is nursing, let it trample the straw that's there and thereby loosen the chaff and do disha. So the only thing that turned the act that was done into something that would passel the parah is your thought process, but not the act per se. Putting the parah into that stall was perfectly A-okay. The parah needed to be put into that stall. And for a machshava, we can't be mechayev you on the machshava. And therefore, what has happened is that you made it happen that the parah became passel. Okay, that's called groma benezikin. The other case is, the mechatat is talking about that you didn't do anything to the mechatat directly. What you did was, you were shakal behem mishkalot. So what happened is, the mechatat was on a scale, and what you did was that you used the weight of the mechatat. So let's say you had 1 liter of mechatat. Okay, so you know that 1 liter of mechatat weighs 1 kilo. So you wanted to figure out how much meat you have. So you put a kilo of meat on the, you put meat until it balanced the mechatat on the other side. But that actually is utilizing the mechatat in your mind. You made it into a weight. So we're not going to be mechayev you for your thought process, are we? Now, actually, there are Rishonim who don't like that shot because it's not just a thought process. I mean, it actually moves, since the scale has to actually move in order to measure. Why is that only a thought process? So there are Tirutim of the other Rishonim, the Rashba, the Ritva, and some others that say that what it's talking about over here is that you used it for a weight on stones. You put stones on the other side. Now you have a kilo of stones. That does not passel the mechatas because the stones don't need to be weighed themselves. And anything that is shalolot tzorech is not considered to be a malacha that destroys the mechatas. Fine. Then you took the stones and you utilized those stones to weigh. So in the end, it wasn't a direct thing that you did to the mechatas, but it ended up that the mechatas was used to weigh the meat. But hold on a second over here. That's not going to help you. Because Rava says that if you use mechata'ot for mishkalot, they remain kosher. Again, according to these Rishonim, meaning in that fashion. Okay, Rashi learns even if it was just the fact that they were only sitting there on the scale, does not mean you use them. But again, you're machshava to see that as being the weight of the meat. But that interrelationship is not an act that's done with the mechatat. Okay, in any event, how do you explain the fact that Chizkiah is trying to tell us that the reason that over there it would be putter is because it's talking about the groma if it's talking about a groma, you can't be chayev even midrabbanan. It's not possible. There's no chiyev. You don't possible it. Lo kasha. Well, it depends. Ha begufam, ha kinegitan. If you use the actual goof of the mechatas, then indeed it would be possible. But over here, you don't use the actual goof. You only measure it on the other side of the scale. So therefore, when Rava says you don't possible it, he's talking about that you just put it on the other side of the scale, or as I said, you use it first for stones. But the direct use of the water as an actual scale, how can you use the water as a scale? Very simple. What you do is you determine the standard density of the type of meat that you are measuring. And then, by the displacement of the water, you can tell directly how much the meat weighs. So what you do is you put the mechatas into this very sophisticated scale, which is a glass jar that has, above the line of the water, 0.5 ounce, 1 ounce, and so on, right? Then you put the meat into the bottle, the water rises, and because you've already figured out the displacement in terms of the weight of the meat, pretty nifty, huh? Archimedes would be really impressed. So in any event, you're then using the water itself to weigh the meat. Okay, very sweet. Eureka. All right, so I must tell you that there are Rishonim who hold that the reason that that passes the Mayim is not because that's called using the water. It passes the Mayim because the moisture of the meat gets mixed with the Mechatas and any other moisture in the Mechatas passes it. But I just want to mention that there is some complication to this approach. But the way I said it to you, that's how Rashi understands it. Anyway, so now here's my problem, okay? I mean, if what we're talking about over here is that we talked using begufam, so then if it's begufam, and then we're back to the problem of Chizkiyah. Because you told me, Rav is not a problem, you're potter, but in the case where you use the water itself, but then if according to Chizkiyah, hezek shenei nikar ishmei hezek, why, we're back to our question, why does it say you would not be chayev in court? You're only chayev b'dinei shamayim, why is that? Ooh. I forgot that. Okay, so fine, let me go back on this. Both are talking about the Kenegda. And the problem over here is where it says that it would be puzzle is where you may siach da'at. So may siach da'at, remember, we've had this amazing, amazing halacha by chatas, by paras chatas. Remember that there are special chumras that apply to tyrus in general, and then there are super duper chumras that apply to the mechatas. Now, the Mechatas, remember that the Torah says, L'mishmeret l'meinida. The Mishmeret means, and remember that the entire Seder Tyrus is called Da'at. This is an amazing thing, and it's really worth thinking about for a moment. That as long as you are conscious of something, it exists. The moment that you're not conscious of it, it's no longer L'mishmeret l'meichatat, and therefore it's just water. So at the moment that it becomes just water, it's useless. So by thinking about something else for a minute, you destroyed his mechatat. That's the point. So one case was talking about where, as you used it, you still kept in mind, I'm using this, but I still realize it's mechatat. So then you didn't cause any damage. But if you stopped thinking about it for a minute, and you went about your business, which is what we usually do, we forget what the heck we're doing because we become completely unconscious when we have a particular mechanical need in mind for something, which is astounding. What happened to human awareness? Who knows? But anyway, then you would be mamazik. And that, indeed, you'd be chayev for. So the chayev over there, of course, but it would still be in terms of a groma, that is to say, right? Because I stopped thinking about it, so it became non-mechatas, but I didn't actively do anything. That's called a grum of a nezik, and so that works out even according to Chizkiyah. Brilliant. What's it for pub? Goes on my back. I have another problem for Chizkiyah. It says over here, a guy steals a coin, and during the time that it's in his rishus, the government cancels that coin. Now it's useless. Or a guy steals truma, and it became tamei in his rishus. Or a guy steals chametz, and he keeps it over Pesach, and now that chametz is, of course, worthless. Then, if he wants to return it, he can return it the way it is. Omerlo, the guy says, "What? You stole my money." Okay, here's your money, take it. What do you mean, take it? Now it's worthless. Well, it looks exactly the same as it did before. You stole my food. Okay, take it back, relax. But I can't eat it anymore. It's how much level of a Pesach. I don't know. Looks exactly the same to me as it did before. So why don't you take it and stop screaming? So these cases, therefore, are basically Hezek Shein HaNikar cases, and we paskin that you could say Hareisho Chalafanacha. Now, if you hold of Chizkiah, namely that Hezek Shein HaNikar is Shmei Hezek, then that means that what you're looking at, because of the fact that it's not detectable, the problem, it's irrelevant whether it's detectable or not. What's important is this item have value or doesn't have value? If it doesn't have value, that is considered to be a legal destruction of the item. How can I give you something that is valueless if it's actually the equivalent of zero? And therefore, it shows that Chizkiah is wrong, because this guy is a Goslin. He needs to pay Momon, and he's not. So to Yufta, you're right. This seems to show that Chizkiah's approach is wrong, and that Hezek Shein HaNikar is not called Hezek. It's the Rabbanon who made the Knas to make you responsible when you do it b'mezid, not the other way around, that the Rabbanon came along to make you not responsible in order to make sure you tell people if you only did it b'shog. Says the Gemara, there might be a way out of this. I mean, it sounds like a teyufta, but what if the machlokas between Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan is actually a machlokas tanaim? So then, I mean, obviously, we're going to find brises that will be saying Hezek Shein HaNikar Ishmei Hezek, and we'll find other brises that say Hezek Shein HaNikar Lav Shmei Hezek. So what's the big deal? I think that this is, perhaps, a machlokas tanaim. Let me show you. We have a case of Hametame, Hamedamea, Hamenasech, Echad Shogeg, VeEchad Beisit Chayav. Oh, wow. This is a totally different approach. Divrei Rebbe Meir. So according to Rebbe Meir, you would actually be Chayav even if you did it B'Shogeg. Rebbe Yehuda is the one who says, B'Shogeg you would be Butter, and B'Mezid you're Chayav. Now that sounds like exactly the Machlokas of Chizkiah and Rebbe Yochanan. The Ma'ar Sever Hezek Shein HaNikar Shmei Hezek. If you hold that it's real Hezek, so that's what Rabbi Meir is saying. This is real Hezek. Why would you be Potter? Adam Mu'ad Li'olam is one of the most fundamental klolim. A person does something, he's responsible for what he does. Makes absolutely no difference whether he did it on purpose or not. And therefore, says Rabbi Meir, what's the difference if you're a Shogeg or you're a Mezid? And you have to pay, like any other damage. Umar Sever Mashen King Reb Yehuda, who says there's a difference between Shogeg and Mezid, he obviously holds that actually Hezek Shein HaNikar is not called Hezek. And the Rabbonin were the ones who put a knas on the person to pay for it. And therefore, they only gave the knas to somebody who did it on purpose. So there you go. I mean, it ain't necessarily so. There's certainly other ways to understand this machlokas of Reb Yossi and Reb Meir, instead of making it such a fundamental question about whether Midiraisa Hezek Shein HaNikar Ishmei Hezek or not. What I could tell you is that everybody agrees to Hezek Shein HaNikar not being Hezek. Now the truth is, obviously, we could have taken the other approach, and we could have said everybody agrees that Hezek Shein HaNikar Ishmei Hezek, and then we could have made these distinctions in a different direction. But we want to use this direction because it happens to be that that's how we come out La halacha, right? So it's the Gemara would rather have it work out la halacha, so we took this approach. So the truth is, everybody holds Hezek Shein HaNikar is not Hezek. The machlokas that Rabbi Meir holds, even b'shogeg, that's a different question. We've seen that question very often. That's called, as Gavi will write down, kontsinan shogeg otumezik. And when we create a knas, can we support a knas if we're only like this, where we're trying to tell you that Hezek Shein HaNikar should be treated as Hezek, and then we make a difference about whether you did it b'shogeg or b'mezid? I mean, if we're trying to tell people that you're chayav for Hezek Shein HaNikar, we're going to have to be consistent, aren't we? So then we should be kontsinan shogeg otumezid. Maybe that's what Rabbi Meir holds. Rebbe Meir holds that a knas can be given to someone who didn't mean to do anything wrong. Nonetheless, he's fined. Why? Because that's what it is that the knas means. And therefore, maybe that's all the Rebbe Meir is saying. So that Rebbe Meir holds konsinu shorgi gotu meizit, whereas Rebbe Yehuda holds bar savar lo konsinu shorgi gotu meizit. If you want to say that that's the point, we run into a big problem. Because Rebbe Meir actually does not hold that konsinu shorgi gotu meizit. I'll prove it to you. And actually, you're going to cause a real problem here, because you're going to cause a contradiction not only in Rebbe Meir, you're going to cause a contradiction in Rebbe Yehuda. Take a look at this. Rami to Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Meir. Rami to Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yehuda. Here we've got a case that we've learned before. Somebody was mevashel on Shabbat. And he did this b'shogeg. So what's the din? So b'shogeg yochal, this, he's allowed to eat it, even on Shabbos. B'mezid lo yochal. And if he did it on purpose, he's not allowed to eat that food. Okay? So says Rebbe Meir. All right, so what does that mean? That means that there's a difference between shogeg and mezid, right? We're going to answer you if you did it b'mezid. We will not answer you if you did it b'shogeg. You just said that according to Rebbe Meir, kansin and shogeg got to mezid. And here it says that according to Rebbe Meir, we're not kansin and shogeg got to mezid. How are you going to explain that that was Rebbe Meir shita by Hezek Shein HaNeker? So therefore, I think we should go back to what we said before. It's not a knas. It's that Rebbe Meir actually holds like Hizkiah, that Hezek Shein HaNeker Shmei Hezek, huh? And you're going to run into trouble with Rebbe Yehuda in the same case here. Rebbe Yehuda, that you claimed, and I'll leave it to Rebbe Yehuda, we're not Kenya Shaga Gota Mezen. Over here it says that B'shogeg, he is not allowed to eat the food on Shabbos. Why? Because he cooked it on Shabbos. He can eat it after Shabbos by waiting long enough for how long it would have taken to cook his food after Shabbos. So that way, he's not being nene from what he did on Shabbos. But we do give him a knas b'shogeg. If he did it b'mezid, then it can never be eaten. Lo yochal olamit. So that would mean you can never eat it. And according to Rabbi Yochanan HaSadler, b'shogeg also, it becomes mutter mitzvah Shabbos, but only for other people, not for him. But if it was eaten b'mezid, it can never be eaten. That's because of another halacha, not because of the knas, but because he holds that ma'aseh Shabbat are considered to be a new iser. Anything made on Shabbos becomes aser. Okay, there's a big machlokas because it says kedesh shulachem. That means that only Shabbat is kedesh, not ma'aseh Shabbos is kedesh. That's the machlokas we're having in Chula. But fine. This sheet of Rabbi Yochanan Sander is not important to us here. We want to take a look at the difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Meir is saying that it's butter if you did a b'shogeg, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's usher even if you did a b'shogeg. The exact opposite of what you claimed the machlokas was b'nogeya the sugya of Hezek Shein HaNeker. So obviously, you're reading that wrong. And the machlokas by Hezek Shein HaNeker was not about kansin and shogeg got to mezid. It was about whether Hezek Shein HaNeker is considered to be Hezek or not, right? So we've got Kasha the Rebbe Meir, the Rebbe Meir, Kasha the Rebbe Yehuda, the Rebbe Yehuda. I can explain this, Chizkiah can say. The Rebbe Meir, the Rebbe Meir, lo Kasha. Because maybe Rebbe Meir only says Kanshin and Shogeg Otu Mezin in the case of Rabbana. So over there, if there's no Nezik, that's Nikar. So it's not considered to be Nezik Midiraisa. If it's not Nezik Midiraisa, you didn't do an Iser Diraisa. So because of that, people are not going to be very careful. People have a tendency to be Mekel and Drabbanat. So there, the Drabbanat made a Knas. In order, we find this very often, in order to make sure that people will take the Drabbanat seriously. But in a Diraisa, what, somebody's going to cook on Shabbos? People don't do that. I mean, they're very mocked, but not to do that. So if it happens, they're not going to make a knas, because people may not take cooking on Shabbos seriously. Who's not going to take cooking on Shabbos seriously? Now, wait a minute. What about Manasseh? Manasseh is a diraisa, and it said that Rebbe Meir said that if you're Manasseh, you're chayev. Now you're trying to tell me that if you did an Isra diraisa, you're not going to give him a knas. Oh, yeah, but that's different. I mean, there you're talking about Avodah Zarah. That is so outrageous. Avodah Zarah, that to allow it any kind of hanah that he could get. That's the Qumran of Avodah Kochavim. So, but there we want to make it seem totally, totally off limits. That is a super knas. Okay, and what about Reb Yehuda? I'll try to explain that away. Lo kasha, because maybe Reb Yehuda actually is the mirror image of Rabbi Meir. Maybe Reb Yehuda, you're right, he does not kinas shogeg atumeset, but where? Only in the drabbanon. Because the drabbanon is not so chomor, so we don't have to be kinas to shogeg, because, I mean, it's like overdoing the reaction, don't you think? I mean, somebody did a shogeg, he wasn't trying to do an iser, and remember the many shittas among Rishonim who hold that there is no iser if you do something midrabbanon b'shogeg, because the only chiyav on a drabbanon is that the Torah said you need to listen to the rabbanon and don't be morayed against the rabbanon. Well, if you did a b'shogeg, you're not doing anything wrong, right? So fine. So therefore, we didn't give you a knas. But on the contrary, if it's a d'oraisa there and only there would we give you a knas. But wait a minute, but Reb Yehuda says the exact opposite when it comes to Menasech. A Menasech is a d'oraisa, and yet Reb Yehuda said that by Menasech there is no knas on a shogeg. Ah, this is another mirror image of Rabbi Meir. Reb Yehuda says, what, you think we need to give a knas on Avodah Zarah? Nobody does Avodah Zarah. You're going to be nuts to do Avodah Zarah. So the Rabbanan, therefore, would never give a knas. People stay away from Avodah Zarah anyway. Okay, so now you're trying to tell me that we can work things out for Chizkiyah. And now I'm not persuaded because I can explain the brayta of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is really a machlokas about katzinut shogeg atumeset, except that we need to also recognize that there's a difference between the d'oraisa and the d'rabbanan in opposite directions for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. That's what we need to say, right? Well, I got a problem with that also, because I can show you that there is a case of a d'oraisa where the din is that Rabbi Meir is actually not following your logic, because here's a case of Rabbi Meir in a d'oraisa. You said that the rabbanon do not give knasas on a d'oraisa because it's not necessary. We only give the knas on a d'rabbanon because people are makel on the d'rabbanon. And yet, over here, we have a d'oraisa, and it says, the Tanya, anoteya b'Shabbat. Somebody plants a tree on Shabbos, and he does chilul Shabbos. So the din is, if he did it b'shogeg, you can leave that tree to grow. But if he did it b'mezid, then you have to tear it out. Okay, so far, I mean, that's okay. But what about if he plants a tree during Shemitah? And he's going to be over on a d'oraisa, if he plants during Shemitah, and it says over there, katzinan shogeg atumeset, bein b'shogeg, bein b'mezid yakor. And you said that Rabbi Meir will not be kinas shogeg atumeset if a person was over on a d'oraisa. So now, how do you explain that? And now let's take a look at Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, Meir, if it was during Shemitah, so then if he did it b'shogeg, then you can keep it. But if he did it b'mezid, you have to rip the tree out. But if he planted it on Shabbos, hey, whether it's b'shogeg or b'mezid, yakor. Now here, Rabbi Meir is contradicting himself. Says, well, what's the matter with you? What do you mean Rabbi Meir is contradicting himself? The Bryce is contradicting itself. I mean, before you ask me what the rule is about the d'oraisa, maybe you should, Rabbi Meir is contradicting itself, maybe point out that the Braita itself has two cases, both of which are d'oraisa, one of which is Chilul Shabbos, and one of which is planting during Shemitah, and we have opposite dinim according to Rabbi Meir and according to Rabbi Yehuda. So don't you think that it would make sense to first try to figure out what the Braita itself is saying before you're using it as a kasha? I mean, obviously there's some other factor here, right? So first tell me what the heck is going on with this Braita. I mean, why don't we take a look at the inconsistencies in the Braisa itself? I mean, both of them are d'oraisa. Michtei, ha d'oraisa, va d'oraisa. Shabbos is a d'oraisa. Shemitah is a d'oraisa. So why would there be a difference between Shabbos and Shemitah? Maishna Shabbat, u'maishna Shviit. Ela hatam kiritani taima. Over there, Rabbi Meir explains himself that this is different. During Shemitah, there's a different reason that I need to be kene shogigot umezid. I, Rabbi Meir, generally would never say on a deraisa you have to be kene shogigot umezid. But this is a very special case. You know why? Mipnei mani omer b'shabbat b'shogegi kayem b'mezid yaker and b'shviita more makpid than on Shabbos bein b'shogeg bein b'mezid yaker. Can I explain it to you? I'll tell you very simply. Think about it. If you are going to need to eat this tree that you planted, you're going to need to eat the pears of this tree 3 years later or 4 years later, where you're going to say it's not even chayiv and neter avoy. Somebody's going to say to you, so how old is this tree? So this tree is 3 years old now. 3 years old? Oh, it could only be 3 years old if it was planted during Shemitah. Well, yeah. Okay, so then that means that you might as well put a sign up on it. This tree was planted in Shemitah, which, of course, is going to cause people to be mezalzel and all this sort of planting in Shemitah. So because of that, I need to make sure that nobody thinks that that's okay. But nobody's going to look at whether it was done on Shabbos. You don't look at the date that it was planted to find out it was done on Shabbos. So they're not going to figure out that it was done on Shabbos. So they don't have for that. I don't have to worry. And I'll tell you something. There's another reason. There's another reason. There are fine people who figured out that maybe Shemitah I don't have to be so careful about, you know? So Yisrael nechshedu ala Shvi'it, but lo nechshedu ala Shabbatot. People are very makpid on Shmirah Shabbos, and they're not makpid as much on Shmirah Shemitah. I mean, what was wrong with the first reason? Actually, the first reason made a lot of sense. You don't want to do a heter of using the tree and allow it to continue to grow till it's post-arl or post-netar avoy, because everybody's going to know it was planted on Shemitah. That's brilliant. So why, what was wrong with that answer? My davar acher, why do I need another answer? I'll tell you why. Because I know what people are going to taina. You know, I mean, if you try telling this to Moshe Forman, what's he going to tell you? He's going to tell you, what do you mean? There certainly could be a case where everyone will know that it was planted on Shabbos. What's the case? Well, the case is, remember, 30 days in a year is considered to be a whole year. So if you planted 30 days before Shemitah, so then that would count as the first year for this tree, right? And now somebody asks you, how old is this tree? Oh, this tree is 3 years old. So when was it planted? Well, I counted the 30 days before the year that it was planted. I counted that. So that has nothing to do with Shemitah. It's planted 30 days before any year. It's 3 years old. It doesn't look 3 years old. Yeah, but it's technically 3 years old because it was 30 days. But wait a minute, 30 days? That would mean you had to plant it on Shabbos. Well, sort of. Okay. So that it could come out, couldn't it? So if you've got to give an answer also to Moshe Forman, so then therefore I threw in this other answer. You could say the real answer is the difference between the people are more machmir on Shabbos than they are on Shemitah. So v'chi tema, maybe you'll kvetch Shabbos. I mean, it could come out zinu de mikla yom shloshim on a Shabbos, and he nata hu yuma hu desakal shatas. Only if he planted on Shabbos, you could count it as a full year. V'lo lo sakal shata, and therefore people, it will know 30 days before Rosh Hashanah means that it was Shabbos. I know when Shabbos was that year. So therefore, I'm telling you, davar acher, tashma davar acher, nechshedu Yisrael ha-shvi'it, velo nechshedu ala Shabbatot. So far, we're able to understand that Rabbi Meir is not seiser himself. Of course, we're going to have to understand why isn't Rabbi Yehuda seiser himself in the Braita. And again, he is being very machmer on, there's two deraisas, and for some reason, he's not being machmer on one deraisa on the Shvi'is, but he's being machmer on the other. Why? So the Rebbe Yehuda is also a kasha, because in Rebbe Yehuda's area, people were extremely makpid on Shvi'is, and therefore there was no need to make a knas. So that the same way what we said, the Rabbanan gave a knas to things that are deraisa, that's only things that people might come to be over on. I'll tell you what happened once in Rabbi Yehuda's city. You know what happened? There was some real bum who was insulting someone and saying to him, yeah, you're not even Jewish. You're the Ger, the son of a Gioret. The guy said, very nice. I tell you one thing. I'm a heck of a lot of a better Jew than you are. Ana lo achli peret shvias kavaser. I don't eat shvias peres, you know. So you want to see what a real insult is in that city. Oh, boy. Okay. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda said, that's a different issue. There's no need to give a knas. Okay, so far we have an alternative explanation to the machlokas of the Tannaim. We don't have to say it's a machlokas Tannaim. We don't have to say that anybody supports Chizkiyah. And therefore we have the problem still with Chizkiyah in terms of can you see a racial cholofanecha? If you hold it, Ezek Shenaniker would actually be called Ezek. That's a deal of Chizkiyah to be seen further. Okay, Rabbosai, it was wonderful being with you. Hinei El Yeshua Si, Eftach, V'lo Efchad, and look forward to being tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, state of health and Gula. Go to Pilate.